welcome to the Mad Money Machine. I'm Paul Douglas Boyer, and this is show 81 for the beginning of October. Coming up on this show, we will have a tool to help you get your history right. We'll take a spin at Guru Roulette. I'll talk about 8 personal finance lessons that can be learned from the board game Monopoly. All that and more on the Mad Money Machine. I went browsing the other day at the Diehards Forum at diehards.org/forum, and I came across this interesting post. The subject intrigued me. It said, "Want $1 million? Elope!" And they pulled an article from Yahoo, which I'll have a link to in the show notes of this show. It says, on average, a U.S. couple spends $28,800 for their wedding, according to a new website set up by the Wedding Report, which provides statistics and market research for the wedding industry. You can see the average cost of a wedding in your specific city by typing in your zip code. San Francisco, the average is $50,000 or more. Well, they say, instead of spending that money on a wedding, what if they invested the money instead? If they placed, say, $35,000 into a Roth IRA, assuming they got married at age 25, and the money earned 9% annually, they'd end up with over $1.26 million in their retirement account at age 65. So here's a question that all people who are going to get married should ask. Would you prefer having an average wedding and beginning your married life in debt, or eloping and having a $1 million retirement fund? While a fairy tale wedding may last a day, the arguments about the finances will likely last for years. But wait! Canned Ham responded in the forum with this posting that reads as follows. In this case, $1 million over 40 years is worth only $306,557 in present-day dollars, assuming 3% inflation. If we discount it at a rate of, say, 5% due to taxes on capital gains and dividends, that's only $142,000 in today's money. I think I'd rather have great memories with my spouse and family when I'm young than an extra $142,000 that won't make much of a difference when I'm old. That's possibly true. Well, how far can we take that, though? Should you just keep spending money when you're young and having great times all the time? Or should you save some money and put it away for your later days in life? Let's go pull something out of the tool crib. I am really excited about this one. This one is for the Do-It-Yourself Portfolio Analyzer. And it is a plug-in or a macro for Excel spreadsheets that helps you accurately calculate the return on a specific stock or mutual fund or exchange-traded fund. Now, first of all, let me set up the problem. Let's say that you bought an exchange-traded fund. Let's just pick a VTI, which is the Vanguard Total U.S. Stock Market Index. And you want to calculate the total return that you've gotten on that ETF in the past 3 years, let's say. So what do? You go get today's price, and you go get the price from 3 years ago, and you divide today's price by the 3 years ago price, minus one. And that is the percentage gain, the total percentage gain, right? Wrong. It doesn't include the dividends. If you just look at the price that as it existed 3 years ago, you have to look at the adjusted price. And the price, the adjusted price changes because when a dividend is given, that adjusted price goes down by the dividend amount. So this makes computing a portfolio's performance very painful. If you just type in what the price was 3 years ago, you need that price to be constantly updated. And that is what this tool does for you. It's the SMF add-in, stock market function add-in for Excel. And I'll have a link to it in the show notes of this show. It's in the Yahoo Finance groups called SMF underscore add-in. Now you need to be a member of Yahoo and have an account in order to join this group, which lets you download this plugin. Now, I'll also, though, have a spreadsheet which has the functions of this included in the spreadsheet, and you can get an example of calculating a portfolio's performance for, say, year-to-date or 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, and it is a fantastic tool. I've already been playing with it for about 8 hours in the past 2 days that I've found this tool. I'm excited to share it with you. I hope you'll have a look at it. Now, the tool includes several functions. The particular function that I use is called Get Yahoo History. And so it goes out to Yahoo and gets the actual price history. It's a tool that I use now to calculate the performance of the lazy portfolios. And it'll also help me compare things like Business Week had an article that I cut out and kept from April 3rd, 2006. They had the 50 best stocks or something, and they said out of the 50 best stocks, only 12 meet our test of something that you should invest in. And I'll name them quickly: Microsoft, Burlington Northern, JP Morgan Chase, Weatherford International, Goldman Sachs, Merrill Lynch, Halliburton, Prudential Financial, Coach, Texas Instruments, Yahoo, and Nvidia. And so what I did then is I entered all of those 12 ticker symbols into my spreadsheet, and I said, go get the adjusted price as of April 5th, 2006, and get the price of today, and run the calculation, and blammo, if you had invested equally in all 12 of these, your annualized return since then would be 13%, which falls short of most of the lazy portfolios. In fact, I took an average of all the lazy portfolios since that time, and all the lazy portfolios' average was 14%. So why waste your time picking stocks when you can beat that stock picking approach with a lazy approach? Well, like I mentioned, I will have an example spreadsheet linked in the show notes of this show. I'll have a link to where you can get the function itself. It does a whole lot of other things, which I'm not going to get into this time. Maybe I'll talk about it in a future shows. You remember that last month was History Month in the 12-step program for active investors, and this tool helps get your history right. Well, that's our tool this time, the Excel Stock Market Functions add-in. And like all the other tools I've given you so far, this one is free. Well, like I mentioned, I have used this new Excel plugin, this add-in, the stock market functions, to compute the lazy portfolios, and I've posted that out at the website, madmoneymachine.com. You'll see a posting there called Lazy Portfolios Q3 Update. I have it sorted by long-term performance, and below it, one sorted by short-term performance, and below that, I have the components of most of the portfolios. Now, the components for the index folio 100, 95, and 90 have links to that one. You can get the official description of those. The short-term winner, coming in at 15.7% year-to-date, is Ted Aronson's lazy portfolio. The long-term winner, since the beginning of 2005, that is, if you consider that long-term, not really long-term, but the winner in that 2 3/4 year period is 20.7% annualized, the Scott Burns Six Ways from Sunday portfolio. And like I mentioned, you can see the details of all that out at madmoneymachine.com. Let's play a round of Guru Roulette. I've replaced the numbers on a roulette wheel with the names of investment gurus. I'll spin the wheel and roll the marble, and for the selected guru, I'll give you a little background on their investment philosophy. So here we go. And the winner this time on Revenue Machine Show 81 is Alan Greenspan. Nah, let's spin again. And the winner this time on Madman Machine Show 81 is Adam Smith. Adam Smith, born 1723 in Kirkcaldy, Scotland, and lived until 1790, was a Scottish moral philosopher and a pioneering political economist. He's a major contributor to the modern perception of free market economics. According to EconLib, today, Smith's reputation rests on his explanation of how rational self-interest in a free market economy leads to economic well-being. It may surprise those who would discount Smith as an advocate of ruthless individualism that his first major work concentrated on ethics and charity. In fact, while chair at the University of Glasgow, Smith's lecture subjects, in order of preference, were natural theology, ethics, jurisprudence, and economics, according to John Millar, Smith's pupil at the time. In The Theory of Moral Sentiments, Smith wrote, quote, "How selfish soever man may be supposed, there are evidently some principles in his nature which interest him in the fortune of others and render their happiness necessary to him, though he derives nothing from it except the pleasure of seeing it." At the same time, Smith had a benign view of self-interest. He denied the view that self-love was, quote, "a principle which could never be virtuous in any degree." Smith argued that life would be tough if our, quote, "affections, which, by the very nature of our being, ought frequently to influence our conduct, could upon no occasion appear virtuous or deserve esteem and commendation from anybody." To Smith, sympathy and self-interest were not antithetical, they were complementary. Quote, "Man has almost constant occasion for the help of his brethren, and it is in vain for him to expect it from their benevolence only," he explained in The Wealth of Nations. Charity, while a virtuous act, could not alone provide the essentials for living. Self-interest was the mechanism that could remedy this shortcoming. Said Smith, "It is not from the benevolence of the butcher, the brewer, or the baker that we can expect our dinner, but from their regard to their own interest. Someone earning money by his own labor benefits himself. Unknowingly, he also benefits society, because to earn income on his labor in a competitive market, he must produce something others value." In Adam Smith's lasting imagery, quote, "By directing that industry in such a manner as its produce may be of greatest value, he intends only his own gain, and he is in this, as in many other cases, led by an invisible hand to promote an end which was of no part of his intention." In his 1776 landmark book, The Wealth of Nations, Adam Smith asserted that capitalistic countries would prosper while non-capitalistic countries would not. His argument was based upon the concept of the invisible hand, the idea that individuals who acted in their own self-interest would benefit society as a whole. By allowing supply and demand to dictate prices, a free market economy would ensure that resources are exchanged in the most efficient manner. Similarly, index fund investing is based on the idea that market prices constantly shift to reflect the most current market conditions, and that speculating about price discrepancies is a losing endeavor. I'll have a link to Adam Smith's book, The Wealth of Nations, which you can read for free online in the show notes of this show. That's our guru for show number 81, Adam Smith. Big Deal by Girls Stuff from the Podsafe Music Network. Got a comment in the show notes from WizKid that says, as a closet market timer also, may I suggest you address the challenge for everyone who has a lump of cash, for example, inheritance, bonus, etc., when to invest it. For example, jam it in all at once, dollar cost average, value average, etc. Add to that how you recommend newly converted index investors should decompose their Cramer selections, again, the timing, and when then to reinvest it in index funds. So a show not about where to invest, but when to invest. Keep those great shows coming. Thanks a lot, WizKid. Well, there is a simple notion here. First, take the risk capacity survey. See what your time horizon for the money is. If you land in an index folio 100, your time horizon's at least 12 years. Index folio 50, your time horizon's probably 6 years, give or take a couple of years. And so you're looking for long-term performance. Therefore, what happens in the next week, month, or two should be of little to no concern of yours, and you can't predict the future anyway. So jam it all in. Jam it all in. Just like getting in the swimming pool, it's best to just jump in instead of gradually taking your toe and then your leg and then your knee and then your thigh. It's just more painful that way. Get into the pool. Get into the investment pool. When you've got the money, invest it. When you need the money, then sell. Those are the only two trades you should make. Well, lost luggage has been in the headlines recently. Now, I'm not a flyer much, so I don't know why exactly, but I do feel compelled to play this song anyway.
The problem is all the new increased security. That's what the O'Hare Baggage Service said to me. We think your garment bags in Stuttgart, Germany. There must be 50 ways to lose your luggage. I said, again, it must take roomfuls of your files. I should wish my missing bags received their frequent flyer miles. No doubt they've earned a trip to the Polynesian Isles with all your 50 ways to lose your luggage. 50 ways to lose your luggage. Just dip the sky cap, Jack. Agree to get bumped, Gump. Board in the dark, Mark. Or try to fly free. Pack too much weight, Kate. Or arrive at the gate late. Just make the crew cross, Ross. And get your bags lost. Ooh, pack too much shell, Mel. Close them with locks, Knox. Fly when it's snowy, Chloe. Or boarding group C. There's gonna be snags, Babs. So don't lose your bag tags. Cause I've got a feeling, Leland. Your stuff's in New Zealand. Why must it be the most important stuff they lose? I wished I'd carried on my clothes and checked the pills and booze. I thought, well, I'll tour this place in just a pair of shoes. Who'll notice anyways? I streaked through town till some policeman shouted halt, and I believe he mentioned something about a sexual assault. And then he cuffed me, but you realize it's really not my fault. It's cause there's 50 ways to lose your luggage. 50 ways to lose your luggage. Just pack lots of fruit, Newt. Check in online, Klein. Fly at Christmas, Chris. You poor SOB. If connections are tight, Dwight. Or you're bumped to a night flight. Have fun in LA, Ray. Your stuff's in Bombay. Ooh, pack too much liquid, Dickwad. Joke about bombs, Tom. Carry on mace, Grace. Then lose your ID. Bring cans of Raid, Jade. Then run when they're x-rayed. If your luggage is stinky, Twinkie, it's shot to Helsinki.
According to FAA regulations, any piece of baggage left unattended will be taken out to the tarmac and blown up. By me. So I really hope it happens.
Came across another article while browsing the web, and this one is called 8 Personal finance lessons I learned from playing Monopoly. Well, most people, I think, in the United States have played this board game, Monopoly. And so it's a good frame of reference to talk about things like these eight lessons. Lesson number one is that passive income is the key to wealth. This is the world of Monopoly. Passive income comes in the form of rent when opposing players land on your properties. In reality, passive income can come from any source, but the path to wealth comes from building up your assets so that they can generate passive income. Why do you save for retirement? So you can live off of your investments passively, and you can stop relying on that $200 every time around the board as a means of survival. In Monopoly, you win by acquiring more land, building up hotels, and bankrupting your opponents. You can't win just by running around the board. Lesson number two, luck is part of life. Take advantage of it. So you hit a few doubles and you fly around the board. Take advantage of it by snatching up as many properties as you can. And when I say properties, of course, in real life, I might substitute that for index funds, right? In life, you'll often catch lucky breaks. Be sure you're in a position to capitalize on those lucky breaks. Sometimes you'll have an opportunity that requires a particular skill. Try expanding your horizons beforehand and polishing up on those skills that are related to your current job but not necessarily applicable at the moment. Lesson number three, an emergency fund is essential. In Monopoly, when you have only $54, a Monopoly with three hotels and a few random deeds like B&O Railroad, you might hit Community Chest, and you get the housing renovation card, the dreaded housing renovation card. Now, you have to find a way to scratch up $100 or so per hotel, and you're plumb out of luck. You flip over B&O and shutter a hotel just to make the payment. Emergency funds are just as important in real life as they are in Monopoly. The only difference is that in real life, there's a lot more emergencies than in Monopoly. Lesson four, improve what you have. Don't overlook the things in your life that you already have and think of ways to make them better. In Monopoly, it's putting houses and hotels on the properties you already own, not trying to find more property. In real life, it's about working hard at the job you already have, getting promoted, getting good raises, and setting yourself up for a financially prosperous retirement. It's tempting to look at what others have, especially material possessions, and think that your life would be better if you had those things. Don't. Lesson five, use jail to reflect, refresh, and come back stronger. I'm not saying you should go to jail to get a breather, as one sometimes tries to do in the end of Monopoly, but sometimes you have to give yourself a time out to rest and relax. Whether it's pressures from your work or pressures from your friends or pressures from your family, it always pays huge dividends to take a step back so that you can collect your thoughts. It could be for a minute or an hour, or even a week, but taking a little me time will always give you more energy to tackle life's challenges with a renewed spirit. And I guess we're not talking about sitting down watching a football game here. We're talking about sitting down by yourself and reflecting. Lesson six, life isn't fair. It's what you make of it. Everyone starts with $1,500 and their butts on go. So everyone starts off as equals, right? Wrong. The player with the first move has an advantage over everyone else. The player with the second move has an advantage over everyone after him or her. The player that hits doubles has an advantage over the player that doesn't. Life isn't fair, but that's okay. The decisions you make after the dice have been thrown are more important than how many spaces you move. Look at all the professional athletes with million-dollar contracts flushed down the toilet because of bad decisions. You could say they got lucky, but they messed things up for themselves. Lesson number seven. Life is about relationships. In Monopoly, part of the game is negotiating with other players to strike up a deal. It's really a proxy for building relationships with people so that you can leverage those relationships for your own benefit. Small business owners build up networks of other professionals, such as attorneys, tax accountants, and bankers, because they know they will need to draw on them in the future. Regular folks like us build up our networks because it may be the contact that gets us our next job. Life is about relationships and building up a network of trusted individuals you can turn to in a jam. And lesson number eight, in Monopoly, there's only one winner, and they say in the blog post. Okay, this last one's a little peek at the next post about Monopoly that I'll write. Lessons I had to unlearn from Monopoly. Longtime listener Rav Jim writes, Paul, why is there a difference between your counting and IFA's counting regarding the Portfolio 100 return, Index Folio 100 return? Well, in the virtual stock market game, which let's look at the results of that real quickly, shall we? We're taking the average of 20 people's stock picking performance in their portfolios against the Index Folio 100. The average right now is about 3.5%. The Index Folio 100 as of last Friday was up 7%. And that number differed from IFA's computation of the number. And here's why. I'm computing it using MarketWatch's estimate of the prices. And as we all know, MarketWatch hasn't done a very good job of keeping things straight. They, for example, splits and dividend reinvestment and so forth. I wouldn't be surprised if many of the actual individual portfolios are incorrect in some degree, but they're not incorrect by a large amount. They're small numbers. For example, IFA computed it at about 7.5%, whereas I computed it at 7%. So give or take a 0.5%, these are within range. And the fact that IFA Index Folio 100 is beating the average by twice as much is a good indicator. There are some individuals that are doing well, though. Cheapo up over 20%, Mark 18%, Mojo Jojo 103 up 17%. And remember, Alan Pendleton used to be leading the whole thing. Well, his portfolio is now up only 0.3%. Well, I emailed out a thing to the Mad Money Machine newsletter subscribers last week. Probably not in time for most people, it turns out, but I was alerted that Bogle would be on the Bill Moyers PBS show. And I watched a little bit of it, but it actually wasn't anything to do with investing. It was more about corruption and capitalism or whatever. So, you know, Bogle has that book about the battle for the soul of capitalism or something like that. And he gripes that too many private organizations own the companies and the boards of directors and so forth, and how it's making things not so good. So if you're interested in that kind of thing, you can find a link in the show notes to this show of how to get to the Bill Moyers website and watch John Bogle talk about that stuff. I did not attend the Portable Media Expo this year in Ontario, California. Instead, I may go next year when the venue changes to Las Vegas. That should be a lot more fun. Next week, we will get into the start of step number 10, risk capacity, October being the 10th month. Now that we've investigated the pitfalls of active investing, learned the language of risk ease, and reviewed the history of various indexes, we're ready to move into the implementation phase of the 12-step program. This is the process that matches people with portfolios. It's analyzing your risk capacity. At the intersection of risk capacity and risk exposure sits a portfolio that will be optimal for each investor and will therefore generate optimal returns for that investor. Investors are entitled to a level of return that is commensurate with their risk capacity. Based on this logic, the measurement of risk capacity can be elevated to a very high level of importance in the investing process. And pulled now from the archives, step 10 in the musical interpretation of the 12-step program for active investors. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. A 12-step program for active investors. Step 10, risk capacity. My name is Paul, and I'm an active investor. We're getting there. It took me some time to figure out just how much risk to take with my investments. I've had to stop lying to myself, so I took my time on the risk capacity survey and got it right. I don't like to fight with active investments. I have finally come home. I'm trying to break out of this. I'm not sick anymore. Taking up all my time studying investments ain't working. I'll wake up and move on. I realize that I need to add some risk exposure to my portfolio. I'm tired of taking no chances. I'm going to make it happen now. I've been wasting a lot of time patching together an active portfolio. I'm tired of mending these fences. I'm going to make it happen now. Break off your lies. Take your time. Get it right. Trying to break out of this. I'm not sick anymore. Taking my time, ain't working. Investors are entitled to a level of return that matches their risk capacity. There are five dimensions for determining risk capacity. First, your time horizon and liquidity needs. Second, your attitude towards risk. Third, your net worth. Fourth, your income and savings rate. And finally, your investment knowledge. Your risk capacity can be determined by answering the questions in the Risk Capacity Survey at ifa.com. If you've never asked yourself these questions, if you've never taken the Risk Capacity Survey, we're here to rescue you. We're here to bring you home. Is there somewhere you can rescue me? Somewhere you can bring me home again? Somewhere you can rescue me? Rescue me. Rescue. This is Paul Douglas Boyer saying it takes money to make money, and it takes getting your history right to make a mad money machine. I'll see you next week. In the meantime, visit our sponsor, Index Funds Advisors at IFA.com. Take their risk capacity survey this month in October. And also, when you do that, you get a free electronic copy of his book, The 12-Step Program for Active Investors. Do that right now. Go get that book. It's fantastic. Music on this program provided by music.podshow.com. Give me a call, 206-734-4763, or email me, feedback@madmoneymachine.com. Visit the website, madmoneymachine.com.